Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. This is a very special episode of Defrag. It's our nostalgia show. It's our Halloween show, because I'm going to be in Vegas next week for Dev Intersection. And it's just a very special episode anyway. So
it's our third week in a row.
Yeah, it is. And that makes it very special, that alone. But today, so you're watching this next week, but this was filmed last week, and today is Back to the Future Day, the day where Marty McFly zapped into the future, and I'm already sick of it. I'm sick of it. It's filled my news feed, my Facebook feed,
Where's my damn hoverboard?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of that.
I was reading an article a couple days ago, and they're saying how people shouldn't be worried about not having their hoverboards because, according to that timeline, we should have had time machines back in 1985.
That is true. And seriously, though, the hoverboard, you don't want the hoverboard. That's the most dangerous thing in the world. No friction. No, you don't want that. I've got one of the little Swagway things, or kind of Segway. It's like two wheels that you stand on.
Oh, yeah.
I have one of those. And so that's about as close as we have right now, other than the Lexus thing that they're working on. But it's dangerous as heck. I mean, I've got a Segway, too. The Segway is, it's not as dangerous. But this thing is like
simply gliding along the floor with no additional supports.
Freaks you out a little bit. Yeah, it can go out from under you a little easier than a real Segway can. So a hoverboard, no. But they'll probably come out with them just in time for me to be old enough to break my hip on it. So, but it'll happen. You watch.
I want a video.
Yeah. And I saw three DeLoreans today, which I thought was kind of interesting. I saw two of them on the road, and then one of them is always on the bottom of Building 9 in the parking garage. They've got one there. And then if you go to the front of the Microsoft homepage today, which it might not work next week, but you type out of time, O-U-T-A-T-I-M-E, you can see they've got something that happens here too. And then it goes on over to the HoloLens site, which was pretty cool.
This tickled me pink. I mean, I was very happy about this little Easter egg.
Yeah.
We don't do enough of these.
I agree.
This is fun.
And so my kids watched Back to the Future 2 last night, and I did notice the young Marty McFly. He's got like these glasses. They aren't the solid metal ones, but there's some other glasses, and he's kind of like looking under them, and they look like HoloLens. So I was like, yeah. And the Jaws that comes out is kind of an augmented reality thing, even though he wasn't wearing glasses then, but that was kind of cool. And since it's our Halloween show, Gov, are you dressing up this year?
I dress up every year. My family has a motif. My daughter dresses up. She's a little over two.
Yeah.
She dresses up as Batman or Bat Baby or Bat Girl, depending on your perspective.
Yeah.
And then my wife and I dress up as her Robins.
Nice. Awesome. Well, this year I'm going to do, my wife and I are doing the glowing, like, stick figure people. Have you seen that? It's just like a LED cord that glows, and you're like, you look like a stick figure, and then the suit you wear is like black, so you look like a walking stick figure.
Nice.
Now, here's what I wanted to do.
You should have like XKCD on your back.
Yeah. And here's what I wanted to do, though. I wanted to do a whole Harry Potter theme with the family, and then I was going to use my like little mini Segway thing and be a Dementor. Because I figured, you know, I could glide around on that and it would be kind of taller and that'd be kind of cool. And my wife was like, you're going to break your neck. You can't, you're always talking about how dangerous it is outside on the sidewalk with that thing. So no, you're going to wear something over your head with that. So that's not going to happen. But
yeah, I think the thing that would actually get you is all the wet leaves on the ground.
Yeah.
I find that to be the most harrowing part of this time of year.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's see, what else? Oh, you're rocking the Surface Pro 4? What's going on there?
It is an SP4.
Nice. And you got to play with the Surface Book too, right?
Oh, I do love the Surface Book.
So look, everybody on our team is just dying for a Surface Book. And we haven't even seen them.
That'll be your new mobile renderer, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be awesome for video editing. I think Golnaz saw one, but I haven't even seen one yet in person, like hands-on. What do you think?
It is amazingly engineered. I mean, if I did not work at Microsoft at all, this device in your hands is... It is just gorgeous.
I knew it.
It's more than gorgeous, right? It's just so tightly machined. There's just no flaws in it at all.
Oh, you're singing my song.
I mean, the hinge is beautiful. The connectors are beautiful. There's just like no play in it. You know, something that you would expect.
Yeah. Right?
It is just, the tolerances are truly amazing in this machine.
So we've got someone who was formerly a Niner who works on the Surface Book team, and I think I'm going to do an interview with him on that hinge and just kind of talk about that alone, because that was a magnificent piece of engineering that they did with that. So
It's nice and stable. It's balanced really well.
Yeah.
You basically can hold it any which way, and you don't feel like it's about to tip out of your hand or anything like that.
So a little battery in the bottom keyboard part. That's a genius idea. Yeah. And the GPU in there.
Mm-hmm.
So very nice. All right. So first question we got was from good old Charles Torrey Carmine. He wrote on Facebook today. He just got gigabit fiber at his house.
Lucky bugger.
Ooh, yeah, no kidding. I live out in the sticks. I'm just waiting. I'm never going to have it, though, I'm sure, but I wish. Anyway, he's saying that he's not getting the most incredible speeds. Of course, Wi-Fi. You're not going to benefit from that fiber over Wi-Fi.
You can.
You can do better, but you're not going to, like, cap out your fiber connection over Wi-Fi. But he's asking...
You might.
Okay. So he's asking, what do I have to do hardware-wise to get the most out of the fiber?
So the best thing that you can do with that kind of speed is know that, for one, you're highly unlikely to ever hit that in terms of pure bandwidth just because websites themselves, like the servers themselves, may not be able to handle it.
Yeah.
So unless you go to some serious backbone sites like, you know, Netflix, YouTube, those types of things that are designed for extremely high bandwidth. But yeah, when you're talking about the hardware up front, the first thing that you're never going to really get away from is that light to network converter box that the Fios company is going to give to you.
So yeah.
That one right there... is your main bottleneck, so to speak. If you're not running the latest hardware that they can provide to you to get you that maximum bandwidth, you know, you're just going to be struggling.
Yeah.
But beyond that, what you really want to look for is the highest capable bandwidth routers.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I do it at home is I actually have a smart switch that's designed as a gateway, a high bandwidth gateway for my connection. I don't have gigabit fiber by any stretch of the imagination. I've got Comcast at home.
Yeah.
But I'm also kind of a hardware guy. I like to throw some enterprise grade stuff at it to, you know, not be limited. But if you went with a high capacity switch, I'm talking, you know, 32 gigabit per second smart switch. If you threw that at the at your head end, then you'll be able to at least maximize the bandwidth coming from that device, because you know you have a real computer, which is not what you're going to have out of your basic home wireless routers, or worse yet, any wireless router that you get from the cable provider or the Fios provider. And then what you'll want to do is just have as much wired connections to that as possible, and just limit the amount of wireless that you've got. Now, I really, really, really like the Asus routers.
Yeah.
They've produced some fantastic routers, and their latest router, which I believe is the AC 88U has something like a 1700 megabit per second bandwidth if you have AC 802.11 AC adapters, which the Surface Pro 4 and 3 actually have. And you can get USB adapters to get your AC out of it. But if you went with that router, limited the number of systems that you had connecting wirelessly, used 5 gigahertz band on those routers, then you'll have the best possible chance of maximizing that bandwidth. If you have, you'd really want to have the most powerful wireless router that you can get that will cover your whole house. Or what you can do is from your switch, or again, not the switch that comes in the wireless router. I don't tend to have anything connected to that. It's just, why would you want to tax your wireless router to handle wired connections as well? What you can do is run a cable upstairs to another wired or wireless router so that you can at least have a backbone that is wired and have a little bit less latency, more power. Because what you'd want to have is from your wireless card in your computer, the shortest distance to your wireless router. So if you had, instead of one wireless router, if you have a very large house, or you know, if you're in a business or whatever, if you have a very large house and you just had one wireless router connecting to your machine, if you're having to go through multiple floors, multiple walls, you're going to degrade your signal and you're not going to get the same bandwidth. But if you had multiple wireless stations throughout your house, then you'll have a better signal strength and you'll be able to maximize your bandwidth as much as possible.
Okay, great.
So yeah, go for the Asus router, get a real smart switch, one that has at least a 32 gigabit per second backbone, and yeah, don't rely on the internal switches for any kind of home router. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, you talked me into the Asus last time. That's what I have now.
Have you
now.
Had any problems with
Not a single one. And it's always been fast. I don't have the problems that I used to trying to connect different wireless things on the other side of the house. So
yeah, I mean,
not until you talked about it did I even think, oh, I haven't even thought about it. I haven't had any problems. So. That's nice.
Yeah, the I think I've got at least 20, 25 wireless devices in my house. I've got a lot of hardware. And the Asus barely breaks a sweat. I mean, they're obviously not all talking at the same time. I have like maybe 10, 15 devices that are actually using bandwidth. But even then, I barely get above 20% utilization on the router.
Next question from Andre. Not Magic Andre either, it's a new one. The thumbnail cache in Windows 8, 8.1 doesn't seem to ever stick and resets itself pretty much every day, sometimes a few times per day. And all the thumbnails get deleted. I've experienced this even on clean installs, and there's a lot of threads in Microsoft Answer forums, and he links to one of them. None of the solutions provided in this thread and others that I've tried have worked, and other solutions are too dirty for me to try involving permissions. I have a lot of large photos and a few folders, and it takes a long time for the thumbnails to be generated. Now imagine going through the same process again and again every day or two, and put it lightly, it's very user unfriendly. Is this intended behavior, and has some thumbnail generation caching process been changed in Windows 10?
It's definitely not intended behavior. I personally haven't encountered this on 8, and I've definitely not encountered it on 10. I'd have to worry if you have, say, Explorer crashing on shutdown. Is it actually every single day that the thumbnail cache gets blown away? Because that's really odd. That's your ThumbsDB file being deleted constantly. If that's actually the case, if it's actually being deleted, then what you can do is set up some auditing on that file and see who's touching it, for one, frequently, because there's clearly a bug happening. I don't know what the bug is without seeing, you know, getting some more information out of this. But it's definitely not supposed to happen, and if you want to follow up with more details, that would be great.
So let me ask you this. If I've got a directory full of pictures, and it's caching the thumbnails for them, and then I go into Photoshop and I change a picture that was all red to all white and save it, and I get back out, I open up Explorer, what happens in Windows for it to know that it even needs to rebuild that?
Well, the file will have changed. So there's a notification.
It knows when all the files have changed, and that looks for a difference between the new mm-hmm. file modified date.
Yep.
Okay, cool. All right, next question from Ant. I just wanted to say that I've been a Windows user since 3.1. Windows 10 is turning me into a fanboy. I bought a Surface Pro 3 after seeing you guys talk about it on the show. I have to say it's the best laptop that I've owned for my use case. Now I'm running Windows 10 on my main workstation, my media server, my Intel compute stick in the bedroom. And he says,
he's got more hardware than I do.
Yeah, he absolutely loves it. He says, if Continuum is everything I hope it is, then I might actually switch from my beloved Android phone. The ability to run desktop apps on my phone would just knock it out of the park. Anyway, no question in the email. I just want to thank you guys and the dev team. That's cool. We do want to make one caveat to that, though.
I mean, from what everyone has seen of Continuum, it's a fantastic feature.
Yeah.
But, you know, be aware that it's not, you're not running the desktop version of an app on your phone. Like, you're not running Photoshop, for example, on the phone. What it is a desktop-like experience using the phone apps that mm-hmm. have a new mode that when you attach it to a large screen and a keyboard and mouse, lets you interact with it as if you were on a desktop.
Yeah.
So
if
you're given a presentation, for example, you know, when you connect it up to a screen, you get now much more information than you would coming off of your phone. You can have, you know, a Word document up on there with a mouse and keyboard and just interact with it as if you were on a desktop.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to remember that these are apps that are universal apps. You know, mm-hmm. the same app could run on the phone, could run on the desktop. It's just a different view mode.
Yeah.
The use case should really be, hey, I've got this computing device. It has a form factor of, you know, a small screen.
Yeah.
And how are you primarily going to use it? But you have this device that's always with you.
Mm-hmm.
It syncs your life. You know, you have all of your stuff in the cloud, work stuff, personal stuff. You got this device that's always with you. And you have the case where, you know what, there are times I just need to go to a meeting, and this is all that I've got. All my files are on here. Bluetooth keyboard.
Bluetooth mouse. You Bluetooth can use mouse. Like, you know, the little Arc mouse, which I'm using on this device here. One other thing. I got to throw out a shout out to this piece of hardware. The Microsoft keyboard, which I have one in my bag. I can go grab it. But Microsoft makes a new keyboard now that has this genius switch on it. So it's a three-way switch to switch between three different Bluetooth devices so that you don't have to pair it with each one. And that would just be phenomenal for carrying around if you're going to use Continuum especially.
Right. Well, the experience with Continuum is going to be such that you'll be able to really have a portable experience.
Mm-hmm.
And one that was going to be very, very compelling.
Yeah, yeah, love it. All right, next question from Jared. I have a user that has used the pin feature in Office 365 Webmail, and when they use 2013 Outlook client, it doesn't show the emails that they pinned. Is the pin feature only for the webmail, or is there a setting that have not changed?
The desktop client currently does not have that. I can't say whether or not it will, but the pin feature is really the web view only.
Yeah. All right, next question from Richard. I just cannot get Internet Explorer to work from any of my three Windows 10 Pro machines. All clean installs of Windows 10 Pro, all rigorously updated. My problem is that the Internet Explorer will just not open. I try to open IE from the Start menu, from Run, Windows key R, from Command Prompt. I've tried running it as admin, it just won't open. I've looked at the Event Viewer and have the following fault application. I explore exe, and then there's, you know, some other error message stuff.
So this one we went back and forth with. I was able to look at the dumps, looked at the installed applications. The thing that was causing Internet Explorer to crash on his machine was Emmet, and that's a Microsoft security tool. And what it does is it hooks into various processes in order to prevent exploits that are in the wild, and that unfortunately was an older version that was not designed for Windows 10, and that was causing the problem. So he had this piece of software that was installed on all his machines, and thus that was the common factor.
Okay.
For these types of crashes like that, you know, folks do send event logs or crash dumps or whatever, so that we can get to the bottom of it. You know, that took, I don't know, less than an hour for me to figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully if you guys send me information like that, we can get you going in the same kind of speed.
Cool. All right, next one from our own Golnaz, sitting out there at the TriCaster. If I right-click on my desktop and sort my icons by name, why does Recycle Bin show up at the top, but Size and Item it doesn't?
Because Recycle Bin, because I'm looking at Golnaz over there, Recycle Bin in the name of this file system is prefixed with a dollar sign.
Okay.
So it... in terms of stored order for file names, it goes up at the top.
I kind of like that. It's up at the top corner, too. I always know where it is. All right. Next question from Steven. I have a 12-month-old laptop, which I've upgraded from 8.1 Home to Windows 10 Home. I understand that there's an upgrade path to Windows 10 Pro using Windows 10 Pro Pack, but I can't find it listed in the Windows Online Store. Is there such a thing, or am I missing it?
It's there, but you can't search for it in the store. It's just not available for search. I don't know why. But in order to get to it, if you go to Settings, Update and Security, and then Activation, I'm not running Home. Our machines are only running Pro, so I can't actually show it to you. There'll be another button here that says Go to Store.
Yeah.
And then that'll activate a deep link that goes to the store. And from there, you can purchase the license to go from Home to Pro for $99.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Next question from Jerry. Windows 10 OneDrive access and syncing is too confusing now under Windows 10. I just want access to my files on OneDrive using a drive letter and keep things simple. So this is something that we've talked about before, just you and I, not during the show. But I'm kind of I'm a little finicky with my Windows Explorer. I liked it to be kind of streamlined, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so with the OneDrive folder that's listed there, you could use a group policy to get rid of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You could do that, but if you did want it mapped as a drive letter, there's a KB article.
That doesn't work on Windows 10 anymore.
That doesn't work on Windows 10.
No.
All right, so...
you can't map a drive letter. You have to go through the sync client if you want to go through Explorer.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just go through the web interface, go to OneDrive.com.
Which is what I tend to do.
Right. Otherwise, the current problem with OneDrive is that you have to sync everything if you want to have access to the files.
Yeah.
So if you have a very, very, very large OneDrive, I mean, I've got a terabyte on my OneDrive,
mm-hmm.
not all of it full, but, you know, it's what's available. In order to just gain access to those through Explorer, you got to sync everything.
Yeah.
There will be a feature coming soon that will not have to do that. It'll go somewhat more towards the placeholder, the way that those worked in 8.1, but it'll be a lot better.
Okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you can't map a drive to the... OneDrive locations anymore.
Okay, and so there was another thing that's in my Windows Explorer that was also causing me some issues.
Mm-hmm.
The Adobe Creative Cloud folder.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't use Creative Cloud's services. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I just use Creative Cloud to, you know, Photoshop and Premiere and stuff like that. So having that folder there was unnecessary. And when I went to look about how to get rid of that, I came to a forum on adobe.com, and they're saying, I'll just read it. He says, however, in Windows 10, Microsoft made it impossible to remove these. You could do it before in Windows. I suggest looking on how to remove shortcuts in Windows 10 navigation bar. OneDrive has the same issue in Windows 10. I'm sure the list goes on with programs that will create a Windows shortcut in the bar, and it's not removable at all. I'm sorry, but this is truly a Windows limitation. So you can get rid of that.
You can get rid of it, and I'd argue that it was never a Windows limitation in that that particular add-in was purposefully added in.
It was created that way.
It was created that way,
yeah.
And it's not that...
ours is created that way as well.
Exactly, and the problem isn't that the user can't just delete it, it's that... the Adobe Creative Cloud or whatever the software may be did not provide a facility to say, don't enable this.
Yes.
And that is actually the crux of this problem. But as I was fiddling on
you got rid of it.
Larry's machine, I was able to get rid of it for him.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I don't have Creative Cloud here, but I can show you exactly what I did.
Okay.
If you go to the registry, you go to HQ Current User Software, Microsoft Windows, Current Version Explorer, Desktop Namespace. So this is actually the critical one. This here is the OneDrive class ID. So that is what will show up here. I never set up OneDrive on here because I'm not syncing all my OneDrive content to this machine.
Yeah.
But Larry's issue was that the Creative Cloud one would also show up here.
Yes.
And he didn't like that.
Yeah.
Because he likes this to be very clean, apparently.
Yeah, I do.
There was the additional class ID for the Adobe Creative Cloud, mm-hmm. and then all I did was right-click on it, rename.
And that class for me was 0E270DAA.
You can search for that. And I just renamed it to the same class ID underscore disabled.
On the left.
On the left.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Sometimes people change things in the registry on the right, like your, you know, is pinned to shell, change it to zero or something. This is changing the name of the class.
Yeah, I just changed this to disabled because now if it tries to load it, it can't.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-da.
Gone.
It's gone.
There you go.
So as you can see, I just got rid of OneDrive.
Yeah.
But if you wanted OneDrive back, you can just rename it, take out disabled. Go, ta-da, there it is.
And you could even make a couple of key exports that you could just double-click on to enable it and disable it if that's something that you want to do.
Absolutely.
If you are as finicky as me and you have to have your stuff clean. All right. And by the magic of television, that keyboard I was talking about has just suddenly appeared here as well. So this is the Microsoft hardware that I was talking about. And you can see in the upper right there, Gove, it's got a three-way switch. And it'll let you switch between three different things. I have it set up to switch between my phone, a Surface, and an iPad.
Does it have a backlight?
Doesn't have a backlight, I don't think.
So close.
But it has this lid that when you open it up, you can stick a device in there and it'll kind of hold it up like a laptop in front of you too. So sometimes I'll stick my phone in there and type longer emails that I wouldn't have wanted to do.
My dream device for this type of thing would be with a embedded trackpad,
yeah,
backlight,
yeah,
the three switches and USB charging.
So, well, that's interesting. Yeah, they have one with a trackpad over in the company store that's Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit bigger though. So this is just the one. I mean, I've got the Bluetooth mouse too, so it's kind of a nice combination. What I like about it is that it's so small. So like, I'm getting on a plane Saturday, I'll take this with me, and
right.
You know, I've got a nice keyboard that I can pair with whatever device I need to. And there's, you know, of course the best part about it, there's no waiting, there's no pairing up again. You just switch to whatever device it is that you want to use and it switches the keyboard. So there is that. All right, next, from Rob, he says, I've been getting this error on 6 PCs about 300 times a day. I've reinstalled and get the same error. Any suggestions? The application-specific permission settings do not grant local activation permission for the COM server application with CLS ID. I posted on the Microsoft support site and found a great solution, but they don't work in Windows 10. Basically, changing registry keys permissions to allow editing the component service DCOM error and add permissions. Problem is, I and others get access denied in Windows 10.
Right.
You said, please don't change this.
Don't change them.
Don't change this. And he said, well, is there a better way to fix this error? And you said, is it actually an error unless something isn't working?
Exactly. So you got to remember that the system will throw events into the event log, and he's been looking in the event log, for pretty much any reason. Now, some of those reasons could be, you know, there's an actual issue, or it could just be completely benign.
Yeah.
In the case of the DCOM activation issues, that's basically saying is there's a piece of software that is trying to activate it with the wrong permissions. Now, if it's highly unlikely to be something that's in box that's doing that.
Yeah.
It is more likely that it's a piece of third-party software that is doing it, but it may be it appears to be completely benign. So yes, you might get some errors, but unless you actually see a real manifestation of that error, like, you know, something that's crashing or something that's throwing up an error dialog as you're using it, you can just ignore it. There's going to be some noise in the event log, unless you actually see a problem, you're interacting, you're having a real issue. just ignore it. And really, really, don't try to change permissions on anything where the owner is trusted installer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why we don't allow admins to change that, is for the reliability and serviceability of the operating system. We're basically saying those things are owned by the OS. There is no reason whatsoever for an end user or an application to ever change it, because it's not an extensibility point. It is not something that should ever change. It is designed to be in a very particular configuration.
Okay, so unless something is causing problems, like mm-hmm. real problems, you can just
ignore it.
Ignore it, all right. Pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So the first pick of the week that I have is Internet Arcade. And you may or may not know about this one, but archive.org, which is like the Library of Congress for the Internet. I think they keep a copy of like every page there is, unless you write them and request that your page be taken down. They now have, or they've had for a while, this grouping of old arcade games that actually even run in the browser. So it'll launch in the browser and you can play these games. So if you get stuck somewhere on the laptop and you want to burn some time and you want to play some old games.
And you have internet connection.
And you have an internet connection. This is a very low bandwidth way to play a ton of games. And it's really fun. Some of these are really interesting and old ones that I just haven't seen in a long time. So it's very cool. You'll really want to check that out. There's another one too that has all the old consoles, except for Nintendo, which when I saw this, I was like, how is this legal? Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to. All right. I assume since they don't have Nintendo as their list of consoles that they've gotten permission for these, and Nintendo doesn't want to be involved in that. And so.
Right.
But anyway, you can go look at some of your old ones. Yeah, so this is Atari 2600. And I bring this up because I played this game like crazy back in the day. And this was The Empire Strikes Back. And to me, it was amazing that you could take those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, probably 7 blocks there that make up that snow speeder, and you could loop the legs of an AT-AT walker mm-hmm. and bring it down. And I was just tickled to death as a kid being able to do this. And I thought, this is the greatest thing that I've ever seen in my entire life. Now, I've since played Star Wars Battlefront, probably put good 15 hours of time into that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would have shown me that game as a kid when I was playing this, I wouldn't have believed it. I would have said, that's impossible. That will never happen in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So amazing times that we live in. Enjoy them. Children, enjoy them, because it is truly amazing times. So there's that. And then the other thing, since it's our nostalgia show, we've got the Windows Soundboard from MIT. And so I found this last night because I was looking for just a soundboard to use in podcasts and just be able to touch different MP3s and have them play. And I kind of laughed because these are all the old sounds that I remember from old versions of Windows. So we should probably have this running in the background, and whenever I say something that doesn't work, I'll just, I'll do a critical error or something. So, yeah,
to me,
that's
this
it.
Is just fun.
It is. Oh, that's nice. Memories. So, one of the other things, since it's our nostalgia show, that I should bring up is the Defrag Tools folks, Andrew and Chad, did an interview with Raymond Chen over in the Microsoft Archives, so that's going to be coming up soon. Keep an eye out for that. It's always fun to go over to Archives. You just see something new every time,
mm-hmm.
And it's pretty amazing. I saw the life-size Bill Gates bobblehead, and you know, I checked in on Clippy. Clippy's still there, wrapped in plastic in a cardboard box. So
with a chain around him.
No chain. But I was thinking, I was like, wow, it's Halloween. It'd be a great time to pull the Clippy costume out. It's like a big costume that someone had to wear. They have two of them.
You should do like Clippy as the ghost of Christmas. Future, which was the one where he's wrapped in chains.
Yeah. Dragging around the chains. And that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we will see you the week after next.
Take care.